Hour number three is brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Make your smile nice and pretty with Knoxville Smiles. Bound dentistry. My tagline would be, let's put a smile on that face of yours. KnoxvilleSmiles.com if you want to take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility. What are you laughing at?
You sounded like the Joker there.
Well, yeah, that was the point, Bob.
No, I know. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you for saying my impression was good.
It's a good impersonation.
It's a good business model, too, maybe, you know?
No. No, the Joker's kind of scary.
Yeah, but some people love him.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to put anybody down. Well, first of all, I don't want anybody in there that loves the Joker. It's like, hey, this is my hero. I don't want anybody in there just creating a little anarchy. I don't want that. And I also don't want, like, only comic book nerds coming to my dentistry.
You could play, like, Dark Knight, you know, on the little TV above them.
I'm good. I don't want the comic book nerds being my only patients. I'm good.
Go in there, a bunch of cosplayers, and they lobby.
No thanks. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, veneers, implants, Invisalign, they can do it all at Knoxville Smiles. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to let them put a smile on that face of yours. All right, so we know Tennessee is locked in as the one seed in the SEC tournament. I believe they have a stranglehold right now on the one seed in the NCAA tournament. Tweeter writes in saying that VR had a guy on from Vegas that said he still had Arizona as a one seed, that Tennessee needed to win Saturday and make it to Sunday in conference tournament. I don't know who that was on VR, who the expert from Vegas was, but that seems dumb to me. Also, like, Arizona being a 2.5-point favorite on a neutral court also seems dumb to me. I think that game would be basically a pick'em. I mean, they're right next to each other in the metrics. In terms of the KenPom ratings. And those are usually a pretty good indication on what the point spreads are going to be. Tennessee and Arizona are side by side. So to say that they'd be a 2.5-point favorite seems a little steep. Like, if Tennessee and Arizona are in the same bracket, I'd imagine Tennessee will be a favorite to come out of that and make the Final Four. Now, you could say it's a difference between a 1 and a 2 seed, but that's also the point of why it's so important to get the 1 seed. But first things first, we'll worry about the NCAA seeding when you make it through the next week or so. The SEC tournament seeding is more pressing because that's what's up next. Bob, you said you got a breakdown for us as we try to map this out.
Well, yeah, mostly what I took some notes on was the battle for the remaining double byes. Because right now, Tennessee, obviously SEC champs, 2-game cushion with 1 game left. You have a 4-way tie after Tennessee between South Carolina, Auburn, Alabama, and Kentucky, all 12-5. And then you have Florida right behind them at 11-6. The final games for those teams on Saturday, we know Tennessee's playing Kentucky. Arkansas is traveling to Alabama, so you would think that that's a win for Alabama. South Carolina's got a tough one down in Starkville against Mississippi State, who I still feel there's – I think Palm had them as a 10 seed. They've lost 3 in a row. I think Mississippi State needs to win to kind of make sure that they're in that conversation for the tournament. So that'll be an interesting one. Florida goes to Vandy. That's a win for Florida. And then Georgia goes to Auburn, which seems like a win for Auburn. So the team that's in the greatest control of their destiny, really, because of tiebreakers, is Kentucky. If they won in Knoxville on Saturday, they're going to jump to what, the 2 seed?
They're the 2 seed if they win. The problem is if they lose, they're the 5 seed most likely.
Right, they fall out. So it's a huge game for them. The stakes are probably highest for them.
Especially when you look at whoever, you know, who the other teams are playing. They're the one kind of in the most trouble. That is going to be the case for the next couple Tennessee games, I would say. Like, Tennessee, you know, has been equal in terms of desperation, in terms of the game significance with the last couple of opponents. You know, like, A&M desperately trying to get in the NCAA tournament. Auburn desperately needs some quad one wins. They need to improve seeding. They were chasing an SEC championship. Alabama, same way. Last night, of course, South Carolina controlled their own destiny in the SEC title race if they won against us. They could have won it on Saturday. It's not the case moving forward. Like, Tennessee does still have things to play for, yes. But in terms of actual hardware, not right now. Saturday matters more to Kentucky. Sam, do you agree or disagree?
Agree.
Like, Kentucky needs that game more than you do because they're trying to improve tournament seeding both in the SEC and NCAA tournament. And then when you get to Friday in the SEC tournament, your first-round opponent or your quarterfinal opponent, that game's going to matter more to them than it does you. So Tennessee's going to be in a weird spot motivation-wise, whereas Kentucky, as Bob laid out, they're playing, I don't want to say for their tournament lives because, you know, I don't think it'll be that dangerous to be a five seed this year. Like, they should be able to win on Thursday, but it's just another game you have to play, and it's more wear and tear on your legs. And instead of winning three games in a row to win a championship, you got to win four games in 4 days.
Yeah, and for a team that has trouble stopping other teams.
Well, that's a good point. They might struggle on Thursday, Bob. That's a fair point.
Yeah. Because it could be a face-off against someone like a Mississippi State or a Texas A&M who, you know, they're not the most prolific offensive teams, but actually that might benefit them in that regard. But
well, what I'm seeing is that if the tournament shakes out or Saturday shakes out where the favorites win, they would play the winner of Arkansas and Vandy, which is I mean, that's a win, but, like, Arkansas just hung 100 on them.
They did.
Arkansas, it doesn't help your RPI, it doesn't help your net rating at all. And, like, also, Arkansas has a puncher's chance to beat you.
It's true.
Vandy hung around them for a little bit. I don't think Vandy would beat them, but Arkansas, give them a game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was looking at South Carolina. For them, it seems, I was just like, they've got some interesting tiebreakers. And I made the comment earlier in the show that they only have been run out by Alabama. They got run out by Auburn, too. They lost by 40.
Yeah.
To Auburn, so they don't have tiebreaker against those guys. I was just wondering if South Carolina could fall out of that double bye, but that game's interesting again for what's at stake for Mississippi State too. But it just makes if Saturday's game didn't matter enough for Tennessee, you know, number one seed, senior day, it's Kentucky. It sure as hell matters a lot to Kentucky, for sure.
And you said Alabama plays who on Saturday?
Arkansas in Tuscaloosa.
And Auburn plays who? They have an easy game, right?
Georgia, yeah, down on the plains.
So, yeah, by my quick calculation, the only way South Carolina can fall out of the top four is if they lose and Kentucky wins. They got that, you know, that safety tiebreaker against them. So they win any, like, tie with them.
So in looking at it that way, Florida with one extra loss, they're probably they'd probably be out of the mix for a double bye, right? Almost doesn't matter what happens with them.
If Florida wins, like Alabama would have to lose to Arkansas, Auburn would have to lose to Georgia.
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem likely.
I agree.
Would Florida win a tiebreaker over Kentucky? Probably. Well, let's see.
They're 1-1 against them.
Yeah, but what would Florida's record be against? They'd be winless against Tennessee. So would Kentucky. Kentucky winless against South Carolina, right? They only played once. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do we know if Florida beat South Carolina?
They did. No, they lost to South Carolina.
And that was their only matchup, right?
Yeah.
Three seed Auburn. Does this Florida or Kentucky? I guess Kentucky has a win over Auburn.
Yeah.
So Florida probably doesn't.
And then they're 1-1 against Bama.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like a very long, long shot for Florida to get to that double bye range. God, isn't it nice to not have to be worrying about this for our guys?
Well, I found myself thinking that last night during the game. You know, I told you that when I was watching something last weekend. I think it was maybe it was Florida, Alabama, or maybe it was just watching Mississippi State the week before against somebody. But, like, it's nice to not have to worry about being on the bubble, and it's not nice not to have to worry about, like, your seeding in the SEC tournament. Like, when, like, oh, let's get this Thursday matchup, and we got to win at least two to get in the tournament, and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, Tennessee has been pretty consistently in the mix for the top four double bye. And this year, you don't even have to worry about that. This year, it's just like, hey, nope, we got our spot. We're good. We know what time we're going to play, and it doesn't matter. We're good. We're going to be the first game every day. Now, if you're looking for the SEC tournament tickets, you might actually benefit a little bit from Kentucky beating Tennessee, because that splits them up in the sessions, because we know that Kentucky fans like to spend all their money in March to go watch Cal blow it in the tournament, but they'll be in your early session, and you know, that sets up a potential semifinals matchup if you beat Kentucky and they are the 5 seed. That would then put them on the early part of the Friday-Saturday combo, if you care about that. So yeah, if the favorites win right now, the breakdown, Bob, should be 1 Tennessee, 4 South Carolina, 2 Alabama, 3 Auburn. Florida would be matched up with Auburn as a 6 seed. Kentucky would be matched up with Carolina as a 5 seed. Those are the only teams that I think really matter. I don't think you're going to have any type of surprise champion this year in the SEC, right?
Yeah, too many good teams to work your way through, you know.
Somebody in the top 6 is winning. Like, yeah. I include Florida in that because I definitely think Florida can win. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what their odds will be of winning the SEC tournament, but like if it's anywhere from like 15 to 20 to 1, probably worth a little bit of a sprinkle. Especially if you don't think you're getting a fully motivated Tennessee team.
Yeah, I was looking at Lenardi's top 16 overall seeds.
Uh-huh.
Just feels contrived, but he's got Duke as a 2 seed now. And why? The only reason I give it some credence is our guy Will Warren has said that too. Like, we maybe are overlooking Duke a little at this point.
No, Duke's been really good since the court storming.
Yeah, they're playing good ball.
That's one that you don't necessarily want to match up with in the Sweet 16 if you are a 2-3 matchup or whatever. But Duke getting to the 2 should mean that Tennessee avoids them at least until the Elite Eight. And I don't think – I mean, maybe – like, do you think that the geography wins out for Arizona? Let's say Tennessee is the 1 seed out west. Do we think geography wins out and Arizona gets to stay out west? It's a 1-2 where Tennessee is the 1 seed, but Arizona's at home, basically?
I think as long as they take care of business in their conference tournament, I'd say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm fine with, whatever. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to beg for a 1 seed and then cry about having to play Arizona out west. But that I'm just saying from a Duke perspective, when you're looking at 2 seeds you maybe don't want to match up with, like,
yeah,
that might be a good thing. Because Duke will probably get to stay over here. Maybe a little Duke-UConn.
Yeah.
Bracket matchup. That'd be nice.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
I was also looking at games tonight involving ranked teams, and there's not much. It's just Pac-12 action, but it is a little bittersweet. There's the Arizona-UCLA matchup, which used to be just titanic in years past, and not that big of a game tonight, and it's the end. You know, it's the end of that matchup for the most part. Kind of sucks.
Arizona going in there is 9.5-point favorites. The 1 seed conversation could come to an end tonight. Like, so if you want to have something to root for, it's late. I don't think I'll want to stay up and stay tuned into it. It's 9:30 tip-off for Arizona at UCLA. But if you're wanting for something to root for, UCLA ending that rivalry with a win and getting back to 500 would be a nice way for Mick Cronin to at least somewhat salvage the end of the season, but also would be a death blow to Arizona's 1 seed opportunities. I'm not going to hold my breath that they do you any favors, but at least you got something to kind of root for with a puncher's chance, if you will. And then on Saturday they get USC.
Yeah.
Right? So they're doing the – man, bad basketball being played in L.A. right now. So UCLA's 14-15 and USC's 12-17.
Yeah.
Is Andy Enfield still there?
Yeah, he is.
Is he going to get fired?
I don't know. I think he'd get another season. I mean, I feel that they've overperformed some years. This year is not one of them, obviously, but he's had some decent tournament runs with them.
I'm so conditioned just to think, like, if a coach has one season where he's six games under 500, it's time to fire him.
Yeah.
Especially, like, if he's not, like, in year one or year two of his tenure. Like, they were 22-11 last year.
He's gotten these recruits that have been good, but he hasn't been able to put them together, you know? Like, well, he's gotten the Mobley boys.
Right?
Yeah, like.
That Mobley team was pretty good. They went semi-deep into the tournament, right?
They Sweet 16, solid. At least.
Okay.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember if they made the Elite Eight or not.
They had some good pieces.
But, yeah, now down to 12-17. They were a preseason top 25 team. He has been there how long?
10 years.
My
right?
Yeah,
God.
I mean, that was his first job that he took out after Florida Gulf Coast,
yeah.
Right?
I guess maybe that's the real thing, is that was 11 years ago. That's really the crazy thing, is that Dunk City was 11 years ago.
I remember
ago.
Vividly that what it was first round against Georgetown. That was like watching a video game, man. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I mean, it was so like shock and awe. It was great, but.
And that was like right at the end of Georgetown too. Like that was kind of the death blow to Georgetown. But they had that reputation of just getting to the tournament and blowing it, and then like it just goes out with a really like beautiful fireball from that kid with the headband on from Florida Gulf Coast, just throwing lobs.
Yeah, that point guard, he was great.
To all of his big men who apparently had trampolines underneath the goal because they were just flying through the air.
That win is still better than like all the 16 seeds beating the ones to me. Like just the aura in which they like got that win and were just throwing lobs and just doing whatever they wanted, like it just felt so special.
By the way, Sam probably knows this, but the darling from last season, Fairleigh Dickinson, they're done. They lost in their conference mm-hmm. tournament, losing record. It's over. They won't be back.
Oh, shucks.
All the one seeds can breathe easily.
You got day basketball today if you want it, John.
What conference?
I actually put four bets in. I'll tell you about okay. it after we get Brandon Ramsey on okay. the air. We'll talk about some Tennessee-Kentucky, that rivalry coming up after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. What?
Welcome back to the morning show. Got Bob Baskerville here with John Reed. We've been basking in the afterglow of a big, big Tennessee win last night, SEC conference champions, but the beat goes on. We have another, what I keep saying, our next biggest game. It's coming up on Saturday against a certain team from Lexington that we know all too well. We're playing Kentucky, and we have a friend of the show who came on with us earlier in the season to preview that first Kentucky matchup, Brandon Ramsey from Kentucky Sports Radio, also a former college basketball coach, knows the game really well, does a great job scouting his team in Lexington, and we're glad to have him on. Good morning, Brandon. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me. You're in the middle of – well, first of all, this game on Saturday means a lot to both schools. Obviously, it's a rivalry game. Tennessee's vying for that one seed in the NCAA tournament now. But for Kentucky, it's pretty simple. You win, you're a two seed in the SEC tournament, get the double bye. You lose, you're going to be on the outside looking in, at least for a double bye. And you guys are also in the middle of a truly prolific offensive run, averaging over 100 points a game over the last four games, I think was a stat you put out there. But defense continues to be suspect. But what are you seeing in terms of the evolution since we last talked, since Tennessee knocked Kentucky off in Lexington? What are you seeing over the last 9 to 10 games?
Yeah, I think you're seeing Kentucky kind of settle in to who they are a little bit in terms of finding a bit more of a reliable rotation. Some of that certainly comes with finally getting healthy and having some continuity to the lineup. The last two games have been the first games all season that Kentucky has had a full roster. So that certainly helps Coach Calipari and company kind of figure out who to play and when to play them. And then, yeah, you just continue to see this offense be so prolific with getting a little bit more minutes to Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham, getting Zvonimir Visic playing a little bit more at the five. The last few games, both DJ Wagner and Justin Edwards have shot it at a really high level from three-point range. So when you add two more legitimate three-point shooting threats to Rob Reed and Antonio Reeves, it makes it really hard for opponents to guard. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, over these last four games, averaging 103 points, the defense, yes, is still suspect, to say the least, but we've at least seen some flashes. Obviously, against Auburn, it was really good. Against Ole Miss, it was really good. And then sort of in this offensive explosion, it's been good enough in a couple stretches a game to kind of let the offense take over and win the game.
Let's talk for a second about, I was looking at your string of wins for Kentucky, and sandwiched in between was that LSU loss, and we were watching that game, and you know, Kentucky had a double-digit lead in the early part of the second half, and it's in Baton Rouge. LSU can definitely sneak up on you. They've done that a few times this season to teams. South Carolina is another one. But from your perspective when you were watching, just given the progress that the team has made overall, what went wrong in that game?
Yeah, I think that game's going to continue to confound Kentucky fans as we get to Selection Sunday and into the tournament, because, I mean, you said it. Kentucky had a 15-point lead just a minute or so into the second half, and just sort of watched it disappear. And it's hard to even really put your finger on one thing. I think obviously we saw, you know, some of the defensive concerns rear their ugly head in that game. I think the offense got a little disjointed down the stretch. There was a lot more one-on-one instead of the kind of sharing the basketball that has become the staple of this Kentucky team. And I think that LSU, in a somewhat similar fashion to Arkansas, can be a more difficult matchup for this Kentucky team, just with the size, physicality, athleticism that they bring. Like, you know, obviously they're not the most skilled teams, but they will get up in you and be a little more physical, and they have some athletes that bother Kentucky a little bit. And I think down the stretch that became an issue. And then obviously you get kind of a weird play at the end to win at the buzzer. But yeah, that's one I think we all wish we had back.
Yeah, you know, the season's been kind of topsy-turvy for Kentucky. It felt like rock bottom almost, you know, when Kentucky lost three of four home games, you know, to Florida, Tennessee, and Gonzaga. But since then, LSU game aside, played pretty well. I'm interested in the vibe check just around John Calipari and his standing right now inside the fan base.
I think there's a lot of people that honestly feel like through the ups and the downs, like, none of it really matters until we see what happens in March, because the Kentucky fans have been through some good regular seasons, even of late, as things haven't maybe been quote unquote Kentucky good. You had a two seed a couple years ago. You had a team going into the 2020 tournament that we never got to see, all that stuff. And I think that, yes, this has absolutely been a roller coaster. We've kind of dug out of some darker times this year, like you mentioned, the three straight home losses. But I think a lot of people are sort of in a wait and see approach of, okay, yeah, things are going pretty well here in these last six, seven games. But if it doesn't translate to, you know, at least certainly a second weekend, but probably in a lot of people's minds, a Final Four, then I think it's going to fall short in a lot of people's opinions. So I think vibes are better than they probably were 4 or 5 weeks ago, but I think a lot of people, it's kind of what happens in the postseason, and not much else really matters at this point.
When you watch the games and you break it down from a coach's perspective, what do you see to credit the defensive struggles too? You know, I was watching, I believe it was the Alabama game, and I heard the announcer say that Calipari had said the players are finally now reading the scouting reports, and that kind of blew my mind, but it kind of checked out to the way the defense had played early in the season. They've played a little bit better since then, but still, you know, the Arkansas game especially kind of went back to giving up a whole bunch of points per possession. And what do you attribute that to? Is it just a lack of effort, a lack of talent? Is it young guys learning a new system? Is it the roster turnover and having guys injured, or all of the above, or what is it?
to me, you can really point to probably a three-headed monster of issues, one of which I do think it's fair to say, you know, this team, again, the last two games have been the first time that they've played together all season. Something I always point to when mentioning that is that also means we probably had only the last week or so where they've all practiced together. And that makes it really hard to build some defensive continuity and kind of figure things out. But also, you're playing a lot of younger guys. I think a lot of these guys come in with 18 years of pretty bad habits defensively. Not through anybody's fault necessarily, but they've always just been so good they never needed to be held accountable defensively because they could go out and score 30, 35 points or whatever, and everything was fine. So I think you're kind of trying to get over some really bad habits that are ingrained in them. And then also, yes, there is some frustrating like lack of awareness or a lack of attention to detail, it seems, where guys are helping off of really good shooters or they're chasing around non-shooters 30 feet from the basket. Or even last night against Vanderbilt, we're letting Ezra Manjan just drive it like constantly to the basket, and Tyron Lawrence too. Like, these guys are low-percentage three-point shooters, and Kentucky's out there guarding them 35 feet from the basket so they can go drive it and lay it up. And there's some kind of awareness and scouting report things that are frustrating too. But hopefully, if you can go score 90 or 100 points a game, you can kind of cover up some of those mistakes.
You talked a little bit about the younger guys, and I noticed that in that Arkansas game where Arkansas was throwing some haymakers there, that game was just wild. But I saw a stat that close to the last 6 minutes of the game, Cal went with an all-freshman lineup to finish out the game. Do you think that that's – obviously, we see and hear enough about Dillingham and Reed Shepard and Justin Edwards. Do we see – do you think that was just an aberration, or do you see that as a pattern that Cal may lean more into, or was it just that's the unpredictability of Cal?
Right. I think it's hard to say that we're going to see a ton of that, because obviously anytime you talk about an all-freshman lineup, you're not talking about Antonio Reeves, and he still, you know, he essentially can be, you know, written in for 20 points a game every time he steps on the floor now, another 20-point game last night. So I don't think you're necessarily going to see a full-fledged youth movement, but I do think, especially now that you have, as I mentioned, DJ Wagner and Justin Edwards playing more like what you might have expected earlier in the season, and you're seeing those guys shoot it better from three-point range, I think you will see those guys maybe continue to play more and more minutes, which might mean, you know, less for guys even like Trey Mitchell, who's kind of struggling coming back from his injury, Dufiero, some of these other guys that have played more minutes in the past for Kentucky. I think you will see them get in there, but obviously the best version of this team still includes Antonio Reeves playing as many minutes as he possibly can.
Talking with Brandon Ramsey, Kentucky Sports Radio. Brandon, I'm curious what the perception up in Lexington is right now of this Tennessee basketball team and this Tennessee basketball program.
I think that at least the more reasonable Kentucky fans. I mean, you guys might say, "What? Who are the reasonable?"
No,
Kentucky
every fans, fan base has them, Brandon. Every fan base has them. It's okay.
But I think that a lot of us, you know, have a great respect for this Tennessee team, because I think that a lot of people are kind of looking at it as this is a typical Tennessee team with, you know, Ziegler and Muscovy and all these guys back that we're used to. They're excellent defensively, but now you all of a sudden have a legitimate first-team All-American in Dalton Knecht. That kind of changes the calculus of what this Tennessee team is, and I think he lifts you up from maybe being the Tennessee that we all kind of wait to do something and like kind of screw it up in the NCAA tournament, for lack of a better term, like where they're going to lose some game they shouldn't lose in round of 32. I think Dalton Knecht is the guy that can make that not happen. So, sure, in Lexington, there's a bunch of people who are still going to say, well, they're wearing orange, so they stink and we hate them. But I think, I mean, going, you know, having a chance to go 15-3 in the SEC, as good as it is this year, you really can't help but have a pretty healthy respect for what the Vols have done this season.
Fear and dread. That's what I was looking for. Fear and dread for Saturday for the trip to right. Knoxville.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. Obviously, Kentucky has a ton to play for, as you mentioned off the top. But I think, you know, obviously anytime you're playing Kentucky, Tennessee wants to win, and you're playing for maybe to be in the driver's seat to get that fourth one seed if you can win the game.
I had one more player question, Brandon, and that's, you mentioned him for a moment, and that's Trey Mitchell, who I felt was a real force for you guys, and then, as you mentioned, got injured and seems like he's struggling to get back. Do you see any movement with him? I saw his numbers from last night's game. Still didn't seem like he contributed that much. Has it really been that tough of a road back for him, or is some of that in his head? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think he's very clearly trying to knock off some rest. I mean, he had a back issue earlier in the season that he probably played through a little bit too much, actually, and then ended up having the shoulder issue, which kept him out for four games here more recently. These two games since he's came back have been pretty ugly from him, to be quite frank. Now, like you said, he was a really big part of what made Kentucky so good early in the season, with what he was able to do as a playmaker in the front court, with his passing ability, with his shooting ability. But that seems to have somewhat fallen off the wayside since he returned. And we're kind of running out of time, obviously, for it to get figured out, because you don't really want to have to figure things out in Knoxville or in Nashville for the SEC tournament or wherever you are in the NCAA tournament. So I think that he'll continue to get chances, but I think those rotations might be shorter and shorter, especially with the way, you know, guys like Justin Edwards are playing, that can kind of fill some of those minutes in a similar way.
Brandon Ramsey, B. Ramsey KSR on X. Appreciate the time. Appreciate the insight. Have a good day, my friend.
Absolutely. Anytime, Bob. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brandon.
I don't know if I buy the injury excuses in terms of Kentucky. Like, I know they've had guys in and out of the lineup, but they are really talented offensively, and when they have all those guys, you know, at their disposal, they're just as efficient, if not more. But, like, it hasn't really changed how I view that team. There's something I feel like a little rotten from the inside just when it comes to defense. I don't understand how athletes that talented. And I think that when I watch Alabama, like, it has to be something kind of just rotten from the inside, because it's not a lack of athletic ability. Both Alabama and Kentucky, of course, got NBA players, or, you know, especially in Kentucky's instance, have NBA players. Top-level athletes at Alabama. I don't understand how they're that bad on defense. I don't understand that.
I got to tell you, the offense is I agree, because the offense is a little scary, and it's almost like they run the risk of wasting some, like, epic offensive performances. Their last four games, last night they shot 51% from the field. Their game against Arkansas, 57% from the field. Mississippi State, which they won on a last-second shot, they shot 52%. Alabama, which was an absolute demolition job, they shot like 63%. They are scoring the ball. That goes without saying, averaging over 100 a game. But the defense is just – he used the term confounding. I would say it's more than that. It's like that is a big-time red flag. And for the possibility, you know, fans' expectations, he said it, and it's probably true, of, hey, we, you know, anything short of a Final Four feels like a, you know, a disappointing season for them. Okay, probably true. It could just as easily go south for them just based on that, because of that lack of defense.
Well, I don't want to steal a tweet, so I'll give it credit. This got shared in my group chat. I haven't verified it, but it feels, my eye test makes it feel correct. But just this comes from Tennessee Lee. No team that ranks top 10 in offensive efficiency and 100 or worse in defensive efficiency has made it past the Sweet 16 in 20 years. Last year, you had Baylor, Missouri, and Iowa all fit this criteria. They were all home by the first weekend. Both Alabama and Kentucky. Kentucky's at 99. So, like, right now they're not outside the top 100, but they might as well be. And who knows, maybe if Tennessee can go score another 100 points on them on Saturday, they'll knock them outside the top 100. But that fits both Alabama and Kentucky. Like, the offense, while playing no defense, it just doesn't work in March.
Yeah.
You just can't be that bad and survive multiple games. Because every team you're playing is going to be quality. There are very few layups in your bracket. Now, you know, of course, the 16 seeds and hell, even the 15 seeds don't feel like layups anymore. It feels like every year at least two 15 seeds are at least threatening a 2 seed. And if you can't stop them and get stops and let them hang around and give them open looks, all it takes is one bad shooting day from you and one good shooting day from them, and next thing you know, you're home. That's just a razor-thin margin for error for both Kentucky and Alabama. I don't buy either one of those teams. I know they score a bunch of points. I know Kentucky's got NBA talent. I don't buy either one of them. Any other thoughts on Tennessee-Kentucky for today? I know we got time to talk about that tomorrow, and we'll talk about it with Rick Barnes. But any other thoughts on anything Brandon Ramsey said?
No, I actually feel better about Kentucky after hearing from Brandon, to be honest with you.
He doesn't feel too confident, seems up to me either.
No, I mean, he's got that coach's perspective. I think he sees the flaws, you know. So he's a good follow. I think Will likes him too. He's talked about him before too, because he'll, you know, he's not a sheep. He's, you know, he follows that team and roots for him. But
I think him and Will actually got into it last week.
Did they really?
Yeah, because of, I think Brandon was trying to say that the defense was no longer like abysmal, that the defense had gotten better, and they followed that up by, you know, getting annihilated offensively by Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas scored a bunch of points. They won that game, but
yeah.
So I think they had a little bit of a disagreement on whether or not Kentucky's defensive problems were fixed. I think now maybe Brandon's realized, then maybe they're not fixed. Like, yeah. They're still kind of holding Kentucky back. But, like, yeah, just like this from John Rothstein over the weekend, where he's talking about how Kentucky has the highest ceiling in the sport, and how if they can win Saturday against Tennessee, that tells you all they know. That tells you everything you need to know about winning 6 games in March, which I completely disagree with. Even if they come into Knoxville and beat Tennessee, that's one game. Kentucky's needing 5 games in a row. I'll say 5 games. I'll give them a pass in the first round, although if they're seeded number 3 or 4, it might not be a pass. But, like, you got to hope that your opponent has an off-shooting night 6 games in a row. You can't win that way. You can't win a title that way. Eventually, you're not going to be making all your shots, and your team's going to get hot, and you can't get any stops to stop them.
It just comes back to what we've been saying, too, and it feels good because we haven't been able to say this in seasons past, but we know the importance of defense, but it's nice to not have this conversation. Tennessee can still have some cold spots in their games. We saw it again last night. But we've gone into tournaments in the past couple of years with the question, can we score enough? That's not a question this year. You know, it's nice. Feels good.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about the scoring droughts, because there's going to be a stretch in the NCAA tournament game where Tennessee looks ugly. And you're going to start thinking and you're going to start doubting everything you kind of thought about this team. And you're going to start thinking, man, same old Rick Barnes, same old offense that can't score. So far this year, the team has came out of those scoring slumps and they've responded. You know, you hope that continues in the tournament. But, like, even when they're not scoring, they're still playing that top 5 defense.
Yep.
And, you know, quite frankly, I know the efficiency numbers don't measure up to it, but for my money, Tennessee's offense is just as good as Alabama and Kentucky's. Like, if I'm talking about just one possession, I'll take Tennessee getting a good look, and I'll take Tennessee's guys making the shot. Like, Kinect is as good, if not better, than every player when it comes to getting his own bucket. I know Reeves and Shepard and Dillingham can do that. So can Dalton Kinect. Like, I know that the numbers don't say that, but, like, Tennessee's offense, if it's not as good, it's just a hair below it. But their defense is in a whole other league compared to these teams. You got to be able to do both. Tennessee's one of the few teams that you can say can do both. Tennessee's ceiling as an offense is a top five offense. Like, I've seen them play a top five game a couple times this year. We haven't really seen their defense get lit up. Except first half against North Carolina.
Sure.
They absolutely whipped your ass first half against North Carolina. You know, I don't even remember. It sometimes you look and just say, like, hey, they're hitting tough shots. What are you going to do? And that was the case a little bit with Carolina, but they're also just getting by you into the rim anytime they wanted to.
60-something points and a half isn't just tough shot after tough
shot.
No,
that's what I'm saying. Like, the Kentucky game a couple years ago in Chandler's year, like, they scored 60 on you in the first half, too, it felt like. And that was some tough shot making, but the same thing, just get to the rim. And every now and then, I guess Tennessee has a little bit of a lapse. They're good for one of them a year, I guess. But for the most part, they've shown up every game.
They were down 22 at half against Carolina, but I swear that there was a moment where Carolina was getting close to a 30-point lead in the first half. I think we all just kind of tried to erase that one from our head. That was tough.
I also think that was before Adu started to turn a real corner.
I think it was before Zakai was
sure. Back, yeah, absolutely.
Back,
a lot of big factors in that.
Yeah. Also, it's coming back from Hawaii and going on the road to a top 10 team. Like, Carolina is better than we thought they were at the time.
Yes.
I think Carolina was ranked like 17th.
Yeah.
Top 15th, 16th, somewhere around there, like, in terms of when that game happened. And we kind of thought of them as like, hey, they're solid, but they're not.
Yeah, they were 17th.
Okay.
You're right.
And yeah, they hung 61 on you. And that game has aged better. A, because Carolina ended up being a pretty good team. But B, like, I came out of that pretty happy with the second half and showing some offensive flashes in the second half. And, of course, that helped lay the groundwork for just how special Dalton Kennett could be. And, you know, that gave him confidence. And who knows what happens if he doesn't sprain his ankle. I want to say Tennessee. Did we get back to, like, seven, like, down, like?
It was under 10, I think.
No, it was.
Well, you lost by eight, so it was definitely under 10.
It was seven. It was seven. And okay. Seven, and I think we had the ball, and then they got it back up to double figures, and then we scored a couple kind of mop-ups at the end.
Yeah, I was going to say there was one where we broke through, and then Carolina hit like a double clutch three or something stupid that kind of pushed the lead back. But, like, yeah, right here. So the 7:30 mark, Josiah hit a three to cut it to seven with 7:30 left. And then R.J. Davis made a three to get it back to 10. They hit some free throws. So you're back down 13, and then you're down 15 with 5 minutes left, and, you know, that was pretty much the end of the game. So the final score looked better than the actual, like, end of the game was.
That was a pretty good Josiah game.
Was it?
20-5, 8 of 11 from the field, couple blocks. Played 38 minutes.
Kennett, of course, was awesome in that second half and kind of wheeled you back into it.
That was an eye-popping performance. That's what I remember. It was like, you know, we already knew he was good, but it was like, holy cow, man. That was impressive. But
I don't think we knew he was that good.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
He caught fire, and you're like, okay, this is the type of performance, this is the type of guy that can catch fire and actually win you the tournament. This guy can do it against this competition on the road and go on these crazy flurries.
You could feel the announcer. That might have been Shulman and Billis. But Shulman, I remember when they cut it to seven, you could hear his level of excitement, like, okay, man, we got a game. You know, between Tennessee closing the gap, Kennett playing the way he did.
It just kind of showed you the offensive explosion, because I told you it was an 18-point game with 11:45 left, and I told you it was, what, 7:30 whenever Tennessee had got it down to seven?
Yep.
So you kind of saw that offensive explosion, this team going on like the equivalent of a kill shot. I mean, I know that's not the definition of it when you're losing and all that, but like going on these 10-0 runs and you know, kind of opening the floodgates, and they did it against a couple teams this year, and they could do it in the tournaments.
Ganey's not bashful, man, ever. 5 of 15 in that game.
He was a little bashful last night.
Yeah, a little bit.
Only 1 of 1. It was a big 3, though, from what I remember.
It was.
I just like his energy.
Yep.
I like his faces he makes, the flexing he does on the sideline. I'm a big Ganey fan. We'll wrap this bad boy up on the other side. It's last call. Stick with us. Got a couple of breaking news this hour. So we got Karl-Anthony Towns tore meniscus. The the Timberwolves, you know, running down that one seed. We'll see how long Cat's out. The meniscus is always weird because you try to decide whether or not you're going to get a surgery to repair it and get it removed or what you're going to do. You said Ben Simmons out for the year for the Nets?
Yeah. They're saying he's out for the remainder of the season.
With what? What's his ailment?
Consulting with specialists and explores treatment options for the nerve impingement in his lower back.
Oh, no. So it's back to the back. Because, like, you see the Nets, they're not really going to do anything. They're behind the Hawks for the 10 seed who aren't going to do anything. Like, the Nets, it makes sense for them to just go ahead and, you know, basically tank the rest of the season. But when you tell me it's, like, his nerve and his back, it just seems like he's cooked now. He came back, played pretty okay. You know, coming back, he had showed some flashes. He had some confidence. I kind of like Ben Simmons, strangely enough, in like a weird way of like everyone hates him. And like he finally started embracing it, so it kind of made me like him a little bit more, but tough for him. We also got some boxing news, Bob. Netflix going to, you know, they're working on their live sports. Did you have the tennis thing last weekend?
Yes.
I didn't see anybody talk about it. Did nobody care?
No, not – I mean –
The Nadal Alcaraz,
yeah,
that was almost worse than the match in terms of.
I didn't
of,
even know about it.
I didn't see who won. I didn't see anything about it. I would see it when I got on Netflix in terms of them promoting it. But who won? Alcaraz, Nadal? Do you know?
They each won a set, and then it was like a 14-12 tiebreaker. But I swear for the life of me, I can't remember who won between the two.
Sounds rigged.
Yeah,
sounds staged. Sounds like they're just out there trying to put on a show for the crowd. Well, Netflix is now getting in the boxing game, and they are going to show Jake Paul, which, yeah, roll your eyes. I know. Nobody cares about Jake Paul anymore. However, they got maybe the one guy I want to see him fight, Mike Tyson. Iron Mike versus Jake Paul in a boxing match.
Tyson may kill
Bite
him.
Bite his ear off.
I was going to say, something bad could happen in this one, really.
Yeah, but that's part of the reason I want to watch. I want to see what happens when Mike Tyson gets inside that ring again. Because, I mean, like, he might be like, hey, I'm going to take it easy, no big deal. But he gets in that ring, who knows? If Paul hits him one time and triggers something at him, Mike Tyson might go back to the old him.
I'm just so mad I'm getting sucked back into this. Because I'm going to be watching for sure. I love Mike Tyson.
So, like, when Netflix does these, they're doing them for free, right? In terms of, or at least, like, no additional charge on your subscriptions. Like, that's appealing to me because I don't ever pay for a Jake Paul fight. I'm not paying $50 or $60 or whatever to watch this. But with it being included in my subscription on Netflix, I'm willing to watch that. It's going to be live in Cowboys Stadium, July 20th. I think this is actually kind of cool.
Good time to put it on, too, probably.
Oh, yeah. Nothing going on.
Yeah. Everybody will be watching that.
And I'm interested in Netflix. You know, they're doing the WWE. You know, they're going to have Monday Night Raw. But I don't think they're going to have much to do with, like, the actual telecast of Monday Night Raw because, of course, WWE has all their TV production kind of in place. They know what they're doing there. This seems to be just like a Netflix kind of standalone thing, right? I mean, I'm sure Jake Paul has his promotions and Tyson maybe has some connections. But, like,
yeah,
seems to kind of be their baby here, right?
I would think so, yeah.
That makes it interesting. I want to see what Netflix can do with that, with their TV.
WWE's never gotten in with Jake Paul, right? I know they have with Logan, right?
Or Jake's been around his brother and, like, been involved in his brother's storyline. Like, he came out and, like, punched somebody. And, like, I don't know. What's the other guy in Prime that does the Prime drink? There's the
KSI.
Yeah. He had a spot, too. But, like, Logan actually wrestles. And Logan's, like, been pretty accepted by the community because he's been pretty good. But, like... Mm-hmm. You know, Jake's been around, but not really. I wouldn't be surprised if he got into it after the boxing thing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
If Tyson makes him reevaluate this whole boxing thing, which is what we're all rooting for, right? Like, we want to see these Paul brothers get knocked out. That's the appeal of watching them box, is to see somebody actually knock them out. The UFC fighters, the loser boxers, the loser MMA fighters, they can't do it. I think we all think Tyson still has that punch in him that can knock out Paul. Now, whether or not he lands it, I don't know. But that's enough to make me watch. Bob, any final thoughts today?
I don't think so. We've got a big show tomorrow. We're going to talk more Kentucky. Got Coach Barnes joining us at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Weekend Betaway with Eli. Should be a good show. Capper to a great week. What a week.
Sam, any thoughts out the door?
Just a champion, that's all.
Just a champion. Celebrate that championship today. That's it for us. The G.I. Jake Show coming up next. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized